Optimism isn't just about seeing the glass half full. It's about believing in possibility, even in the face of overwhelming challenges. It's about pushing through adversity, turning obstacles into opportunities, and never losing sight of hope. But optimism is also about imagination, the ability to see beyond limitations, to envision a brighter future, and to create new possibilities. And few embody this spirit more than our guest today. Greg Bertisch is a sailor, author, and philanthropist. But more than that, he's an example of the power of human potential. At the age of 30, he faced a life-threatening battle with endocarditis. He spent nearly 200 days in the hospital, enduring multiple surgeries, misdiagnosis, and months of uncertainty. Yet through visualization, optimism, and his passion for the ocean, Greg found a way to survive and reclaim his life. Years later, in April 2016, Greg undertook an extraordinary challenge as a middle-aged, multiple heart surgery survivor on blood thinners. He sailed a tiny children's dinghy over 200 kilometers in the open ocean, 1 kilometer for each day he had spent in hospital. His mission was to prove that small people can do huge things. The never give up message resonates with countless patients, children, and supporters. He raised over 300,000 rand for the new ICU at the Red Cross Children's Hospital. That effort later contributed to raising over 1 million rand to renovate and paint the unit. The Little Optimist Children's Trust isn't just an organization, it's a movement. It brings hope to children in hospitals, shelters, and disadvantaged communities by using sailing therapy, storytelling, and educational support to instill resilience, confidence, and the ability to dream beyond their circumstances. Through this work, Greg and his team prove that optimism isn't just a feeling. It's a force for change powered by imagination and belief in a brighter future. Welcome to Our Voice, Our Future, powered by Breadline Africa, a podcast where real voices tell real stories that inspire change. I'm your host, Chifan Raycliffe, and today we explore the extraordinary power of optimism, resilience, imagination, and daring to dream. Hi, Greg.
Good day, sir.
So just before we get into it, let me ask you a question that's not on the preparation.
You're gonna throw me a curveball.
Yeah. Okay. So if you ran into 10-year-old self, okay, with everything that you've been through, your journey, your challenges, what would you say to the 10-year-old self?
I would love to run into my 10-year-old self, because I could definitely inspire that young man who was really a bullied, shy, insecure child who never thought he would amount to much. So I think if I did bump into him and run into him, I would tell him to dream bigger, to not worry about what other people thought about him. Just because they put me in a box as a youngster, you can break out of that box. There is no box. That's society's box. And I would have loved to have shown that young Greg how that little people with a big heart and a never give up attitude can achieve anything.
And then obviously breaking out of that box, you know, and being bullied. How did you navigate your way out of that box?
Through a series, you know, there was no one moment. It took a long time. I mean, I battled as a child. I battled as a teen. I had very bad acne, which, you know, debilitates you hugely if you have very low self-esteem already, and then you have that on top of that. So there was no defining moment. I was very lucky to have very supportive and, you know, parents with a growth mindset that really supported us, and two very key individuals, my brothers, who were a big part of my life, you know. So I was a fortunate child, and in a way that's the scary thing, because I was a fortunate one and I still suffered. And, you know, it's allowed me to be thankful It's allowed me to realize how lucky I was, that a child, even who didn't have anything, you know, I didn't have a life-threatening disease. I wasn't, you know, in a situation that would have put many children into decision makings that they shouldn't have made, but I could have made those decisions even though I was a fortunate child. So I was so depressed at times that, you know, I definitely thought about why is there more, is it worth living? And even though I had everything, I was thinking like that. So imagine if I was a child who had nothing. That would have been compounded multiple times. And if I was thinking that way as the most fortunate child in that sort of space, just because I was dyslexic, being bullied, felt I didn't fit, felt I wasn't the smartest or the best at anything. And I was thinking like that. Imagine what a child who's really got nothing or is facing hardship socioeconomically, health-wise. And then, you know, from broken homes, from homes with addiction or alcoholism or gangsterism or anything like that. And those are the kids we deal with now. So it's almost armed me and allowed me to realize what it feels like, so that when I work with children and when we put programs together for children, I've been there.
Yeah, so I'm from Cape Flats. I'm from that area you're speaking about. And I know a couple of guys that went through surfing programs. One of my mates, Alfonso, I don't know if you know him, he's from Manenberg, and he was a street kid. And one of the programs in Musenberg, they took him off the street and you know, they brought him a surfboard. They gave him a surfboard and he went out into the ocean. And he became a South African surfer. So he surfed for the country and he got, you know, colors.
Amazing.
And so what sort of relationship do you have with the ocean, and when did that start?
Yeah, look, we grew up in the ocean. We're very lucky. My father was an ocean man. He was a waterman, sailing, surfing, kayaking, water skiing. You know, he traveled the world. And we grew up in Longabon Lagoon up the west coast, and we were very lucky to experience that from a young age. So like my father used to say, we had salt water in our veins, and we lived and breathed the ocean. But little did I know at that time, and little did many people realize at that time, that that was a form of therapy. And today it's been scientifically proved. It is called blue mind therapy. It's the power of water, the calming effect, the effect that allows people to be in the moment, to forget their problems, to feel that energy and natural energy of the ocean, you know, coming, whether you're in it, immersed in it, or on it, or around it. We all know what that sound of trickling water sounds like, whether it's a stream or a slight breaking wave. You know how amazing it feels to stand under a shower, to dive into a pool. That is blue mind therapy. And that's what we have tapped into now, many, many years later, with our sailing therapy, and the same in the surfing and the surfing therapy.
And you know, going back as a child, did you ever see that, you know, being something that you were going to do using this?
No,
not at all.
No, you know, the ocean was a tool to go faster, to go deeper, to get the thrill, really. And, you know, we've always been involved in it. I started a business, a surf travel business. So I traveled around the world, and I sent surfers and divers around the world to follow their passions and to go surfing and enjoy the oceans around the world as part of my business. You know, I've had a stand-up paddleboards business. I've been involved in the surf industry. And then I've surfed very big waves and chased big waves around the world and surfing around the world, purely for my own experience and to thrive off that, and only realizing now that that was my form of therapy. And, you know, as through the different steps you asked about, when did I, you know, what allowed me to, what was the moment or where I stepped out of where I was as this bullied, shy child? It definitely, the ocean was always there. Pretty much everything good in my life has come from a link to the ocean or water, you know, whether it was, you know, my becoming a Springbok stand-up paddleboarder and traveling the world, starting my business, which was linked to the ocean and surf travel, meeting my wife, all linked to the ocean. And now what we're doing now, One of our programs is sailing therapy, and now we are using sailing, which was a huge therapeutic tool for me as a little boy. And now we're using that as a therapeutic tool for children who would never be able to have that kind of experience.
So you mentioned, you know, you obviously, you experienced the highs of the highs. I mean, you mentioned the big waves and the thrill that comes with that, and meeting your wife and all those sort of things. And then, you know, facing a life-threatening, you know, illness with an endocarditis.
Mm.
Tell me about how it went from the highs to the lows and a bit about that journey.
Well, the high was, you know, I was in Madagascar, exploring Madagascar, surfing on these outer reefs in the middle of nowhere with a few mates. And I got very, very sick. So I was doing something that I loved. I was in the water, but I picked up some form of tropical bacteria there that was never diagnosed. I came back to South Africa, and there was something, I knew something was wrong with me. No, the doctors couldn't determine what it was. From physios to chiropractors to, you know, medical doctors, no one could tell what was wrong with me. I had pains in my neck and in my back very deep down. And over a series of misdiagnoses, they eventually found out. I was captain of the Clifton Life Saving Club. You know, I was 30 years old. I was single. I was strong. I was young. I was fairly good looking, I would like to think. But, you know, life, that is what happens in life. You know, I was one of the lucky ones. And this bacteria attacked my heart valves and it ate away my aortic heart valve. And I literally, my heart swelled up to 30, 40% bigger than it should be. And one day I could not walk up a flight of stairs at age 30 from being able to compete nationally around the world and to surf the biggest waves in the world to not even be able to walk up a flight of stairs. And I was rushed in for emergency open heart surgery at age 30. And obviously a huge, you know, game changer. So, you know, from the highest of the highs to the lowest of the lows, lying in hospital, not knowing whether you'll survive or not. And endocarditis is a very dangerous, what do we call it? Infection that affects the heart valves, and it's very hard to treat. And if you can't diagnose what kind of bacteria, the doctors don't know what to treat it with. And that was the problem. They could never diagnose it. And that ended up, you know, over multiple months and years, you know, putting me in hospital for over 200 days and ending up having two open heart surgeries and three major infections.
So you mentioned the 200 days in the hospital. Mm. Obviously, it can hit anybody. What was going through your mind during that time? Every day you woke up, like, what were you thinking? What were you?
Yeah, you know, maybe a very poignant moment, and I'll use a story. We love to use stories and storytelling with the children we work with, but it puts everything into perspective. You know, I lay there after my first op. I was very sick. I'd been in ICU for a couple of weeks. There was problems in my lungs. There'd been complications with the heart. They hadn't been able to diagnose and culture the bacteria, so they didn't know how to treat it. And I lay there incredibly sick, thinking, why me? Why me at age 30? Why am I lying here? And in so much physical, I wouldn't say pain, but discomfort, that after weeks, I was also thinking, like, I don't really want to go on. If this is going to, I don't want to live like this. And I looked over to my right and there was an 80-year-old man lying there, and he'd also had an open heart surgery. And I thought, you know, sure, when I'm 80, but why now? Why when I'm 30? Why me? And then I looked over to my left, and on my left was a 4-month-old baby, and he was lying there. Same wires, same ventilator. He'd also had an open heart surgery at 4 months old. And that put everything into perspective. I suddenly realized and went from thinking, why me, to feeling how lucky I was. How lucky I was to have got to 30 years old, to have had a whole lifetime of memories and experiences. And this little baby was already fighting for his life.
You mentioned earlier your brothers. Are you the youngest of the brothers? And where were they all?
Often think I'm the youngest because, you know, I had an oil of Olay sponsor and my skin and everything. You know, I look very young. But we're actually very close. We've got three of us, and we're all within 3 years of each other. So we're all like 18 months apart. I am the oldest. But yeah, so they were a big part of my life and still are a big part of my life and a huge inspiration to me.
Yeah, and what is the involvement, you know, with your projects and so forth? Were they there by your bedside? Were they,
yeah,
what sort of encouragement were they giving you?
No, 100%. You know, my other brother, Con, has gone through his own medical. He's beaten and overcome a very, very dangerous kind of brain cancer and survived it. And he's gone on to create amazing work and a program, an app called Cancer Dojo, where he assists people along with medication, fight their own cancers and use the mind, the power of the mind, to get involved in fighting their own cancers. And now he uses that as a purpose-driven tool in advertising and marketing and in empowering staff and people and companies and brands to have a purpose for what they're doing instead of just trying to win awards and sell products. So he's been a massive inspiration. And my other brother, Chris, he wasn't there as much because he was traveling the world and he's done some great feats and paddled across the Atlantic Ocean and surfed some of the biggest waves and won the Mavericks event in America. So he's also, you know, he's had this connection with the ocean and has faced some crazy challenges as well. So both of them have been a big part of inspiring me to overcome challenges.
And part of your recovery on this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you sailed the Optimus dinghy for 200 kilometers. How did that all come about?
Yes, the greatest little sailboat in the world. It's an 8-foot long bathtub, basically. It looks like your bathtub at home. It's the biggest sailing class in the world, actually. Every kid around the world, when you learn under the age of 15 to sail, you actually learn in an Optimus dinghy. It's the greatest boat with the greatest name. And when I grew up in Longabon Lagoon, that was actually my refuge. It was my little escape. I would literally, as a shy, bullied, insecure kid, I would climb into my little Optimus and I would sail off across the lagoon into the sunset, and I would forget all my problems, all the bullying, all the feeling that I wasn't good enough, that the kids laughed at me, taunted me, and I'd forget it. And that little Optimus and I had this bond. And weirdly enough, I always believed that one day I would do something great with an Optimus. And when I lay literally in that ICU with baby Adam, who was that baby, I remembered a promise that I made to my dad as a 10-year-old, saying, "Dad, one day I'm going to sail my Optimus dinghy from Cape Town to Longabon," which is like 100 kilometers. And these little children's dinghies aren't built, you know, they're built for lakes and lagoons, and they're built for kids under 50 kilograms. They're not meant to go into the big ocean. But as many of us do, we forget our childhood dreams and life carries on. And that moment made me remember that promise to my dad. And I said, you know what, if I survive all this, for my dad, who had passed away by that stage, I said, I'm going to honor him and I'm going to sail that little Optimus dinghy from Cape Town to Longabon. And hence, I had to do it a few years later after I had a second operation and a third infection. And a couple of years later, I eventually, you know, cobbled it all together and found that little Optimus and decided to go off and fulfill that dream. Of sailing from Cape Hunklip across False Bay around the Cape of Storms and up the west coast to Longabon Lagoon, which actually ended up being about 200 kilometers. And I wanted it to be 200 kilometers because I was trying to raise 200,000 rand for the Red Cross Children's Hospital, and I'd spent 200 days in hospital. So I wanted that to be the link. And I had this idea about a children's book. I know you want to ask me about that, but I'd had that idea and I didn't want it just to be a fable and a story that I could tell kids as a little cartoon book. I wanted to show them that a real adult, a middle-aged man who's had two open heart surgeries, could climb in a little tiny children's boat with a funny square sail and a funny little nose and a short, fat, slow boat that shouldn't go in the ocean, that shouldn't take an adult, but had this big heart. And all the other boats laughed at him and said, "You will never be a real boat. You can never go in the big ocean. your sail's too square, your mast's too short, you're too slow. But he had a big heart and he believed. So I wanted to not only write the book about that, but I wanted to show that it really was possible. And you don't have to be the fastest. You don't have to be the biggest. You don't have to be the smartest. You don't have to be the first. But you can do something. You can follow your dreams in your own way. And when I did that journey, I wasn't trying to be the first or the fastest or the biggest. I didn't have any, you know what? I didn't put myself in a box and say I had to try and be an adventurer or anything. I did it in my own way because I'd promised it to my dad, and I wanted to show kids that it doesn't matter however they do it and how whatever their dreams look like, they can do it even if everyone laughs at you. Do it in your own way.
So before we talk about that book.
Yes.
Just briefly, what was your relationship like with your dad? And then as you came to the end of that sail, you know, you see, okay, there's the shore. I've done this. As you're heading to the final stretch, paint the picture for me. What was it like? Were you sitting there with your eyes closed? Were you thinking about your dad? Were you thinking about when you made that promise to him as a kid and now you're fulfilling that promise?
First of all, my dad, you know, a lot of people, he was one of those amazing characters that anyone who met him remembered him. He always had a smile, always had a witty joke, a funny quirk. He always had, as he would say, a twinkle in his eye. And I truly believe that he left a little piece of magic in each of us when he passed on from this world. And we all carry that. We carry his sense of adventure, his spirit for being in the ocean and for doing good in this world. So, you know, when I linked that to my father, it comes from a very special place and it comes from the heart. It wasn't just to do it to be the first. I didn't just, you know, suck it out of my thumb and say I'm going to sail an optimist to get people to watch me and raise money. It came from a place that really meant a lot to me. And it's tough sailing a little boat as an adult, you know, under those great cliffs of Cape Point and up the West Coast and very dynamic conditions. That little boat and I got smashed on multiple occasions. And it wasn't as easy as I thought, you know, even though, you know, I did it carefully and I planned it and I knew this coastline very well, it was much tougher than I thought. So when I got to the end and I achieved it, it was a big green tick for me and a lot of pressure off me because I wanted to do it for my father. I wanted to do it for myself, but I wanted to do it for the children as well. I wanted, you know, if I hadn't succeeded, I couldn't inspire all the kids that I wanted to inspire. And I didn't know at that stage how much this little optimist would go on and how many thousands and thousands of children literally around the world that little optimist would inspire because of this.
Yeah. And then tell me a bit about the little optimist, you know, the series. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I'd written that book in my head already. And then when I did the journey, I completed the journey and I put the book onto paper and wrote it and then published it later that year or the next year. You know, it was fairly easy. It's not easy writing a book, even a children's book. I'm not the greatest of illustrators. So I got a friend of mine, Chip Snadden, who's a surfer and a sailor, lives in Komaki, and he is a brilliant artist. And he just, because he's spent time in the ocean and sailed and surfed, he could just, and he'd spent time at Longabon Lagoon as well. So he could just beautifully put it together and it just came together amazingly and magically. And then we published the book and that book has gone on to sell probably about 7,000 copies now. And for every book that I sell, I donate one to a child in need. So for every book that we've sold, 7,000 books, we've donated 7,000 to kids in hospital, to in marginalized situations through our programs around South Africa. And it's in three languages. In fact, it's in five languages now. We've got it in Xhosa and Afrikaans. So the big thing is to get, you know, literature and beautiful children's book, inspirational and educational story books to children that would never have that opportunity. And there are multiple communities around South Africa that don't get a book in Xhosa, in isiXhosa. They don't get a book even in Afrikaans, a children's book like that is inspirational and educational, that touches a nerve with them and inspires them. So that's been amazing. And since then, I've written a second one. The first one was all about never giving up and being different, a little person who's different. But if you've got a big heart and you never give up, you can achieve anything. And the second one is called The Little Optimist and the Sea Monster. It's also set in Longabon Lagoon, and it all comes from fables that my father had made up and told us. And it's all about plastic pollution and protecting our oceans. So each book has a message. And we use those books now. We've got workbooks and worksheets and programs developed around that. So the children come to our Sailing Therapy Academy, and we teach them ocean health. We teach them water safety. We teach them about never giving up, about being a little person who can achieve so much. And we use the stories and the teachings of this little optimist boat.
So you've sold over 7,000 copies, as you mentioned. Now you've given another 7,000 away for each.
We've probably sold very five and given away nine. But I was never very good at maths.
Yeah,
it's hard to yeah. We give away a lot of books, maybe too many.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, where you grew up, you know, you were but of the fortunate side, and if you had been on the other side, you know, on the Cape Flats or that sort of thing, it would have been a different story for you. So
Lower Kenilworth count as the Cape Flats?
Almost.
No, not quite though. But
how do you connect with that kids in your book, you know, that you come from different worlds?
You know what? It's been amazing. Even though most of them have never sailed, been on a boat, know much about the ocean, the story is so powerful, and it comes from such a raw and real place that kids, whether they come from a very poor socioeconomic background, whether they feel they're the wrong color, whether they have one leg or two legs or no legs, whether they are suffering from heart conditions or cancer, they see themselves as this little boat. They buy into the story. And if I could show you some of the poems and the messages and the writings that we receive from children, not only who are suffering, you know, that are glaringly obviously coming from a poor or marginalized background or a health compromised background, but even kids in very fortunate situations. And that's what we've realized. You know, we help all kids, and our programs now, we even have private schools coming to do Sailing Through Life programs they pay. And for every kid that comes and does a Sailing Through Life program, everyone that pays for it, they sponsor a child who can't afford it. So everything we do, we sell a book, we give a book. We bring a child on a program that pays, they pay for a child that can't. But even there are children, just like I was, who are suffering. And it's all relative. How much you're suffering. And even though one child might only, inverted commas, have dyslexia and be being bullied at school and feel like their life isn't worth living, to them, that problem, what are they going through, can be as bad as some child who is in a township somewhere who has very little food, who is going through much tougher situations. But in that moment for that child, this is as bad as it gets. And they are willing to take their life or do something silly or join a gang or take some drugs or give up because of that. And that's where we found it's very powerful. And this book transcends the socioeconomic backgrounds, the physical and mental backgrounds, the gender backgrounds. It transcends it. And kids see themselves as that little boat, and they tell the story months, years later about how they're going to be just like that little optimist and overcome that challenge.
So through your therapy, you know, you have kids from all over. Is there a specific, if you want to share, a specific kid or story that really touched you, that maybe it's close to your heart?
Yeah, there is. I don't know if I should tell it here. It's an amazing story, and it's a story that really allowed us to do what we're doing now. It proved my theory. I think it was 2017. We were working with the Reach for a Dream Foundation, and they brought us 10 little boys who were suffering from some sort of physical affliction, some sort of disease, some sort of trauma they were overcoming. And in that group, many of them were you know, was unsure whether they would live. And you know what the Reach for a Dream Foundation does? It offers children who need hope, who are possibly on their last legs or touch and go. It offers them an opportunity to fulfill their dream. And these little boys' dream was to go sailing or to go on a boat for the first time in their lives. None of them had ever been on a boat or sailing. And we brought these little boys down on a Captain Courage Day down to the Milnerton Aquatic Club because it was the closest to the areas they came from. And these boys arrived in all sorts of different states with tubes, crutches, bandages. And one little boy, his name was Terence. He was 9 years old. And he had a terrible debilitating disease called Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, which is a disease that only little boys get. And it's where your muscles literally waste away the older you get. And these boys, as they pass on from about 6, 7 years old, their muscles get weaker and they get to a stage where they can't even walk anymore because their legs become too weak. And eventually between the age of 15 and 20, normally, their heart, which is a muscle, is too weak to pump and they pass away. And this little boy came down and it was his dream to go sailing. And all the other boys rushed down to the water's edge to go sailing in the little Optimus boats. All of them except Terence, who sat at the back in his wheelchair with his mom. You see, Terence hadn't walked for 6 months. He'd become too weak. And they deemed that it was too dangerous. He was too weak to sit up in the boat and to go out onto the lake. And they all went sailing, the other boys, and there was so much joy and so much laughter, and everyone was watching the boys sailing. And then we heard this gasp, Terence! And it was Terence's mom. And we turned around, and I've told this story 1,000 times. I get goosebumps every time. Down the lawn came Terence. He got out of his wheelchair, and he was walking down the lawn, towards the boats, towards his dream, to go sailing for the first time in his life. And we loaded him into the boat, the instructors loaded him, put his life jacket on, and he went out sailing not once, not twice, he went 4 times, he wouldn't get out of the boat. And it was a day that no one there will ever forget. I still speak to people who just happened to be been there on the day, some of the members of the yacht club, and they still remind me, every time I see them, that's the one thing they say, geez, I remember that day, that child, Terence. And that boy, it changed his life. He lived, breathed, ate, slept sailing after that. He went back to his special needs school, Astra Special School, and he was known as the sailor. It gave him a reason for being. And he eventually came back to our Sailing Therapy Academy, the academy that we started because of that one small boy, a little boy with a big heart, a little boy who was terminally ill, but showed so much passion and heart that we started the Sailing Therapy Academy. And he brought many of his children, his friends back there, and we've had hundreds of their children come through our academy. We've got a multi-day, year-long program running with the school now because of Terence. And unfortunately, Terence passed away a year ago, but his teachers and his parents, you know, told us that it gave him a reason for living and it became his everything. And that is why he existed. And even in the end, when I sat on his bed and he told me that he was ready to go, he said to me, Greg, I'm ready to go to heaven. And I want to go to heaven in my little optimist dinghy. And if that isn't powerful and a reason to show what water and the ocean and sailing and having a passion can do for a child, then nothing. And there's nothing else more powerful that I've seen. And now we are using that same amazing energy and healing properties of water and the in the moment and experience of sailing to heal and to help and to inspire and to give opportunity to children who would never have that opportunity, who would never have the access, who would never have the funds to do something like that. And that's what we're doing now. We're ticking so many boxes on the mental health space, on the opportunity, the inclusion, the equality, breaking down barriers in the sailing world and marine world, which is one of the most elitist, white, male-dominated sports worldwide. And we are trying to show people that this is a way that we can create inclusivity, give opportunity to those, and at the same time, heal what is possibly broken.
Amazing story. You mentioned I'm getting goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps myself. And then obviously you touched on, you know, with the mental health aspect that it heals and so forth. What are some of those other things like with building confidence 100%. And resilience? Can you touch on some of those?
Look, there's so many, you know, every child is different and they find, you know, the camaraderie of just being part of something, feeling special, the overcoming, building resilience, overcoming a challenge. I mean, we bring children down in the morning that are fearful to walk down to the water's edge. They will not walk down the gangplank to go to see the boats even. 1 hour, an hour and a half later, they are marching and singing down to the water's edge. An hour after that, they are sailing in the boats. 20 minutes after that, they kick the instructors out. They're sailing their own boats. They get to experience something and they overcome a fear and a challenge. And when they leave at the end of that day with their medal around their neck and their certificate that it says, you are a sailor, they go home and they know, wow, this morning I was fearful of water. This afternoon I left and I'm a sailor. I can sail my own boat. If I can do that in one day, I can do anything. And they truly start believing that because it's so tangible. It's so powerful. And when they face something in life, whether it's a maths test or not getting in a soccer team or a death in the family or a tough situation at home, finance-wise, you know, relationship-wise, they go back to that moment and they say, wow, I did that. Imagine what I can get through this.
So as we wrap things up, with the theme of daring to dream, what advice would you give young kids who are struggling to see, you know, a bright future?
What advice would I give? I think the first thing is to... It's pretty cliche. Number one is to realize that everyone is different. I think that is, you know, there is no perfect. There is no one person. There's no one place. There's nothing that says you are not as good as someone else. You do not have to be the fastest, the biggest, the smartest, especially when you're young, because you haven't found your groove, your niche. You haven't found what you really like, your passion. So don't sweat it. Don't worry about why you're not as good as other people. You will find something that you are better than all of them at. And if you believe it and you don't give up on your dreams, however silly they may seem, follow what you love doing. Follow your dreams and realize how special you are, that one day if you're doing something that you love, it's going to benefit you and your life is going to be so much better and more enriched.
You know, looking ahead, what are some of your dreams for the Little Optimist and, you know, some...
Look, we got so many and I think I dream really big now. So, you know, I've got to slow down sometimes. But our aim is, you know, we upgrade and renovate hospitals and under-resourced schools all around the country. So, you know, we'd love to get to find some bigger funding so that we can do more. We've upgraded and renovated and beautified 11 under-resourced places of education and healing over the last sort of 6-7 years. And we want to do more of those. So, you know, if we can scale that and create safe spaces for children to heal and to learn, we would love to scale that and get on some big funders who will help us do that. And then with the sailing therapy, you know, I still believe that what we are doing there, it is globally unique. And we're very lucky we've partnered with the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. They've seen what we're doing. And we've set up 2 pilot sites, one in Strandfontein. The second one's going to be in Hout Bay. And we're going to create access and scale and more impact by having these pilot sailing therapy sites doing exactly what we do here in the waterfront, all around South Africa, Africa, and the world. And that's what I want to do. That's the big dream, is that every yacht club in the world should be running a sailing through life sailing therapy program and giving back and allowing access, opportunity, mental health benefits, and creating pathways to employment and into the marine and sailing industry for everyone.
Yeah. And so for all these funders and people that you're trying to reach, how can they get involved and how can they support your work?
Call me. The littleoptimisttrust.org, that's our website. Optimist Sailing Academy, you can see what we're doing there, .org as well. But Greg at the Little Optimist Trust, that's who you want to get, or Greg at the littleoptimist.org. Get involved, and it's anything from connecting us, spreading the word, volunteering, donating products, donating time. It's all the other things that we really battle, is like the marketing and the social media and the promotion and the advertising and the accounts and the everything that comes with a public benefit organization and a charity. There's so much else that goes on. So we would love funds. We would love and any assistance anywhere. And we are a Section 18A public benefit organization, so we can issue tax certificates. We would love to partner with any organization or individual that wants to get involved.
Cool, man. That's it. Thanks for your time. And hopefully we can have you back in the seat, when you go international with the Academy.
Next year.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into Our Voice, Our Future, powered by Breadline Africa. If you've been inspired today, remember, no matter your circumstances, you have the power to dream and to make those dreams a reality. If you'd like to support Greg's work, visit the Little Optimist website at www.thelittleoptimist.org to learn more, donate, or get involved. You can also follow Breadline Africa to see how we're working to create a brighter future for children across South Africa.